This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you are having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Yes, you are on 101.9 High FM. This is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. I think if you ask a parent, I mean, I don't know if it actually ever changes. So maybe any parent, one of our biggest worries with our children, especially with babies and toddlers, I would say most parents will say sleep and feeding, okay, especially feeding our children. We are often a little bit worried about, are they getting enough? Are they waking up because they're hungry? And especially I feel when you move into the toddler years, I often feel parents forget to make the transition from babyhood into toddlerhood. And there's a little bit of a mind shift that needs to happen, I feel. But if mealtimes in your house feels like a negotiation more than anything else, and rather than a family meal, you are certainly not alone. Many parents worry when the children refuses vegetables, only eats a handful of foods, or seems to survive on fresh air and maybe fish fingers. I don't know. Feeding struggles and picky eating are some of the most common concerns parents face, and often leaving them feeling frustrated and worried and unsure whether or not they're doing the right thing. So today, luckily, I, as always, bring in the experts to talk about this specific topic and talking about those feeding struggles we have with our toddlers and maybe young or older babies, and picky eating. So joining me today is Deborah Jacobson, who is a dietitian. She's also from our community with a special interest in pediatrics and a master's in nutrition. Hello, Deborah. How are you today?
Hello. Nice to be on air. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, just a pleasure. I also think today's question of the day and how it started this morning fits in nicely with our topic today. So as always, I do want you to be part of the conversation. And today's question is, if you could ban one Jewish food forever, which one would it be and why? So please do send us a WhatsApp on 061-895-1019. It's WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. We would love to hear if there's a food, a Jewish food. I mean, maybe I should say, because I am not Jewish, so I don't eat kosher. I actually am a very adventurous eater. I can't even honestly think of one food that I don't eat. I can't think of it. Maybe snake. But I don't think that's a common thing to eat anyway. I'm actually quite, I love eating. I also love cooking, which may be something you didn't know. And you, Deborah?
Me? No, I'm a very adventurous eater. always have been. I've always been interested in food. I love trying new things. I always have. I find it exciting.
Me too. No, I mean, also you obviously know an absurd amount about feeding. Again, this is such a very common kind of worry for parents to experience, their children not eating very well. And I myself, I had such different children when it came to eating. My son, Oscar, when he was small, he was quite picky. And I mean, I pureed his food for an absurd amount of time, actually. I mean, I think maybe I was also a little bit dumb and shouldn't have done it, and I could have done it in a better way. I also know that I often sneaked in food covered in yogurt and all sorts of things, which I know is... And then my daughter came along and she was the opposite. She was She ate everything. And I really started with her quite early to introduce normal food, because I was too lazy to make proper, just separate pureed food for her for a long time. I just didn't have the time to do it in the same way, but she ate lots of things very soon. But now I have to say, fast forward to, I have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, and both of them, like I said, one super picky, one less picky. And both of them are super adventurous eaters, eat most things. They're quite healthy. They're 12 and 14, so they're never going to say they love vegetables, but they do eat it. And that's just kind of my first thought that I just want to leave with each person that is struggling. Just because your child struggles now does not mean it's going to last forever. But many parents do worry about their child, like their picky eaters. What is considered normal picky eating, and when should parents actually start worrying about it?
Well, just going back to what you're talking about with your own experience, actually, the statistics are that up to 50% of parents will feel that their children are fussy or picky eaters in the literature. So it's actually a very big developmental stage. Actually, it's a phase, and it's normally outgrown by the time a child gets to about 6 years, starts at about 1 to 3, and it's a phase, and we have to realize that we have to manage it as a phase, and that's what it really is. But when you to be concerned with the picky eater, well, generally a picky eater, like you say, they have a very, very, very small variety of foods that they eat, and you would be more concerned if a child omitted a whole food group. Okay. And that, so if you look at the food groups, it would be the energy foods, the protein building foods, the fruit and vegetables, and then you have a subsection of protein, which is a dairy. Children, generally the fussy eaters, do very well on the dairy, and they do very well on the energy. But so the poor casualties of this condition tend to be fruit and vegetables and protein. So if you find that a child is actually omitting an entire group, that's really when to be a little bit more concerned. Go see someone and see where they're lacking and how you can make a difference, you know, with their diet. Another good way of monitoring how a child is doing is to monitor their growth. So when children are born, they have a growth chart, and sometimes we forget that we have them. We get given them, and we go dutifully to the pediatrician every, you know, for the first year, and then it actually continues right up until you're 18 years old. So it's good to keep check on the weight, and you could look at a height, but mainly the weight, and just see how that goes. If a child is growing within their percentile, then it's fine. If they become static or they're losing weight, that's really a time to be more concerned.
I mean, this is for me also like reminiscing now in my head. I'm reminiscing about when my children were small, because I also now remember the phase where my daughter basically covered everything in tomato, or she would have covered everything in tomato sauce if I allowed her. Which I obviously didn't. I mean, literally, I would say, like, we would eat, like, chicken and vegetables and rice, and she would have tomato sauce with that on the side, which I then didn't allow, because I was like, you can't eat. There's a lot of sugar in most tomato sauce as well. But I honestly, and I also just now thinking about my son, to this day, I mean, he doesn't eat tomato sauce at all. Even when he eats a hot dog or a hamburger, he doesn't put tomato. Even with fries, he does not eat tomato sauce. And I've only just realized that one was a, like, maybe it's because my daughter ate all of the tomato sauce and then he never had the opportunity to deal with it.
It just shows you how different everyone is. So
yeah,
you get
definitely
some children who eat everything and anything and there's absolutely no problem. And then you get others who are much more restrictive. And it's often the phase of between 1 and 2, if you think about where they are at in their development, they're learning how to do so many things. They're learning to walk, and they're learning to talk and to play, etc.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, you are on 101.9 High FM. This is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we're talking parenting. Today, we're talking about picky eating and feeding struggles with our babies and toddlers, which is a very common concern. Even my guest today, who's Deborah Jacobson, she's a dietitian, is sharing with us her insight. And she, before the ad break, mentioned to us that it is quite normal for, and it's a developmental phase for toddlers to go through a phase of picky eating. Again, today's question is, if you could ban one Jewish food forever, which one would it be and why? Send us a WhatsApp on 061-895-1019. And of course, if you are wanting to ask questions to Deborah, you can by all means also send us a WhatsApp. We would love to hear from you. Yeah. Simone Herring, who's also from the show, and she's got a show just now. She also said that Deborah treated my son about 20 years ago. She was and is brilliant. He was hardly on the graph because he was so thin. He's still very thin. But he just completed the 70.3 Ironman. He was with her sport dietitian and still trying to gain weight. He's never loved food and still doesn't, but he does fuel his body. Why does some people not enjoy food? And I mean, that actually fits in. Honestly, Simone, that's for me. I equally cannot understand that concept. It's like when someone tells me they don't enjoy traveling, which obviously that is a case, that this, people are different and you don't have to love all the stuff I love. Also, if people don't like running, also don't understand that. But this is also for me a concept that I don't understand. How is it possible that some people don't like it? But I mean, it ties in nicely to the next question I also wanted to ask is, why do some children seem a little bit more willing to eat anything as babies, but then become more selective as toddlers?
Yeah, it's that the phase from about 1 to 3, the child is starting to become very, very independent and learning a whole lot of new skills. And there's so much more to be interested in than eating. Also, their appetite will be dropping because their weight gain is slowing in the childhood years. In your first year, children eat generally, they eat very well. We don't see that many problems in infancy. And their weight is tripled in the first year. So if a child is born at 3.5 kilograms, by one, they're about 10 kilograms. But by two, they're only about 12.4 kilograms. Wow. Or so the weight gain is rapidly becoming much less, so your appetite will do as well. Also, it's a stage where children are exploring. They're showing and they're working out their preferences like we do with their foods. They're finding their own voice, they're expressing themselves, they're becoming little people, and working around food is just one of those symptoms of that phase.
And I mean, this also ties into what I was mentioning earlier. For me, sometimes parents forget to make, for me, the transition from babyhood into toddlerhood, the mindset change. That's what I mean. Because when your baby is small, I think that's almost one of the only things you have to do as a mom in the beginning is feed them. Mm. And it is an insane amount, those first 3 months, how regularly you're feeding. And this continues then into feeding them regularly as babies when you start introducing solids. And by the time they get to 1 year, obviously the milk is like secondary to the solid meals at that point. And then they're on solid food. And you have to remember, I mean, have you ever been on a liquid diet in your life? I mean, that goes through you like this. And solid food does sustain you longer. And they don't need as regular feeding necessarily, or as what they did before. What are some of the most common mistakes parents make when they're trying to get their child to eat more and try new foods?
You, as a parent, you first of all need to have a realistic expectation as to what your toddler can actually eat. That's a big one. The stomach of a toddler is about as big as their fist. So they can't actually eat huge amounts at a time. They need small meals, about two or three bigger meals, and then two snacks in the day. So it's important to be realistic about what to expect for your children to eat. And not everyone's going to like everything you give them, and that's okay. It's important not to force your children to eat and to make it such a big problem in your lives. As long as you are monitoring their weight and they're growing and they're developing normally and everything is good, then you really shouldn't be worrying. About 85% of children who are fussy or picky eaters have absolutely no long-term neurological problems or developmental growth problems. It's something that they'll outgrow and they'll be fine. So it's important to just not force them how to eat, and it's important to always give them repetitive, you know, just keep on, don't give up. So just don't give up. If you give your child banana once, they don't want once, it doesn't mean to say they'll never have it. You have to expose them over and over and over again. And don't get into the battles. Don't get upset when they don't eat. It's not a personal insult to you, although it's easier said than done. I mean, I've had three fussy eaters, picky eaters myself. So
of course, the shoemaker's children.
I do know what it feels like. You feel rejected. You do. And it's hard. It's hard to pretend you don't feel that way. But it's something you do have to work on, because your children do pick up on that anxiety. And then it can become a behavioral problem. And, you know, and then it makes things much worse.
No, I can't now remember what the book is called, and I don't have it with me, but I don't know if you've read Meg Foray. She actually wrote a new book, and she wrote the book specifically with a psychologist as well. And for me, and I mean, you've made reference to that now just as well, is that the importance of feeding and food really goes beyond just the nutritional value that you're getting from it. And we do have to kind of set up our children and the psychological side of it as well, and their relationship with food. And forcing, I feel, and I mean, like you said, that's not a good thing, because it has an impact on how your child is perceiving the food and the situation. And you do want it to be a nice time. For us in my family, since my children were babies, and to this day, one of our most special connecting times, and I mean, this is also a Jewish thing as well, I feel, eating together and spending time together. Meal time is more than just us eating. There is an aspect of bonding, connecting that goes with it. And if they start off like feeling forced and having a negative connotation with food, like I said, for me, it has a lot bigger, and like you also said, far bigger impact than just the nutritional impact.
Sure. They're learning new skills. They're learning how to self-feed. They're learning how to communicate what they want, what they like. They're learning to understand their hunger cues, their satiety cues. And so there has to be a trust involved there with parents. Another thing that parents tend to do, and you also spoke about it a little bit earlier, is if you don't move with the developmental skills of a child, you're going to lose an important period of time where they're learning how to eat and enjoy food and self-feed. So sometimes I'll get a patient whose child is, say, 12, 15 months, and this child is still on purees and they're not eating. And the reason is because they want to self-feed. They want to be able to recognize the food on the plate, pick it up, eat it, explore it, and just be more independent. So it's important to move with the textures as they are able to, you know, grow up and learn how to chew and how to pick up food as well.
If you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 Chai FM. This is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we're talking parenting. And today we're talking about picky eating and food struggles that we have with our older children and toddlers specifically as well. My guest today is Deborah Jacobson, who is a dietitian with a special interest in pediatrics. She is clearly known because Simone Herring also mentioned that she she has helped her son a long time ago. I mean, I have to say, Deborah, you just said 20 years ago. I don't believe it because you don't look that much older. It's like, for me, in my head, it doesn't make sense. But I'm not going to say that's fine. I believe Simone. I'm not saying she's lying, but it
well,
seems
I'm very glad
a little bit
that
odd.
She's doing well and her son's doing well. That's the best news I can hear.
Very, very important. If you've just joined me, you've missed some of the show, but please do remember that this show and all of my shows are available as a podcast for you to go listen to. Deborah, before you were also now mentioning that parents kind of have to, and I mean, I also said that there's lots of things that we have to think about, that it's not just about the nutrition part. There's a psychological aspect and bonding aspect when it comes to it, and also development aspect, like you mentioned, and that parents kind of have to, look at how their children are reacting and where they are in the developmental phase. But that now, you know, how much responsibilities lie with the parents and how much lies with the child when it comes to feeding?
It's a very, very good question. And if anyone knows Ellen Satter, that's where this comes from. It's understanding that your role as a parent is to buy the food, prepare the food, choose healthy options, give the food at the right times, the amounts of food that's appropriate for them, give them the foods, but it's the child's responsibility to eat it. So
no.
It's not all on you. It's really not all on you. You don't have that control. They need to learn that. They need to learn their hunger cues. It's important to realize that it's not all on you. It's also on them, because children are actually innately able to know when they are hungry and when they are full. We lose it along the way. It's important to hold on to that for as long as you can. And if a child trusts you, it's going to be a positive experience to eat. So, and when I first learned about this concept, it was a relief for me, you know, as a parent, as a mother. It's not all on me. It's also up to the child. They actually have their own innate little bodies and they know what they're doing.
Yeah. And they also, like you said, need to kind of start trusting that feeling of hunger, and that we're not, as you said, forcing them to feed. And then they're just like, well, I must be hungry all the time. And I mean, this is a very Afrikaans thing as well. Up to this
day. It's a very Jewish thing too, I promise you.
It's like at 41, I still struggle to not finish my plate of food. My husband, I mean, sometimes there's like this tiny piece of steak left on his plate. And I'm like thinking, just eat the piece of steak. And he just has like this great ability to, it's like, you know, I'm full, and he stops. Honestly, that is for me, to this day, one of the most difficult things is to stop eating when I'm full. I have to finish my plate.
But you learn it when you're younger. This is the time where you learn. That's why I love working with children so much. You just have an impact on the rest of their lives.
Yeah. But luckily now I have learned. So my trick now is just to fill my plate with less.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So that I still finish it, but
yes,
there's less.
But it's not so much, right.
But again, this is the reality is this. It's nice. It's easy for us to say these things as well, to trust. But again, a very big concern for us is my child getting enough? It's like programmed within us. And even today, I've got a 12 and 14 year old. If my son hasn't eaten properly for a whole day, I'm going to worry about it. Even though I trust that he knows that he can take care a little bit, I will be worried about it. But what should parents now do when meal times turn into a battle, bribing, negotiating, begging, is becoming the norm? What can parents do?
Well, that needs to stop, because then you've got this negative association with food, and that's really not what you're trying to create. And it's easy said than done, because I do know what it's like. You give your children food and they just refuse it over and over again. But it's not going to help to get upset. So it's important to just to allow them to choose what they want to give. And remember the division of labor. You give the food and then they eat it. If people are getting upset, it's better to just leave the room and just calm down and then come back. But the shouting and screaming and performing is really not going to help anybody. So I mean, they basically, if they don't want to have their meal, you give them the meal. If they don't want it, say after half an hour 40 or 40 minutes, you just simply remove it, and then they need to wait for the next meal until they eat. So running around and making more food, going back to the kitchen, giving a tub of yogurt, making a bottle of milk, etc. It's not a good idea, because then the children know that you're going to run around trying to help them, and actually in the way, they're not going to eat the new food either. So it's a power play. It's a power control play. So food, meal times need to be together. It's important to eat as a family, and not to put so much emphasis on the food, as you say, but actually just to talk about the day, help each other, dish up for each other, just a social way of being. Bribing a child when they you know, say, look, if you eat your veggies, I'll give you a chocolate, is not a good idea either, because then the chocolate becomes the desired item.
Yeah. And the psychology behind it, I feel, I don't think food, especially not sweet, should ever be used as a form of reward. Because I also feel that there is a psychology behind it where it becomes, you know, they want this, so they're doing it because they want that, and it's unhealthy, I feel. So yeah, for me, a big part again of meal times is very much bonding and communicating with my family. In all honesty, it's one of my love languages, is cooking and giving my family meals. It's really such an important part of, so for me again, like, it is really about, it's a lot more than just the nutritional part of it. It is, there is another aspect to it. Also, as a reminder, and I feel that parents need to remember that from a very young age already, please remember it takes about 5 to 7 days for someone to die of hunger. your child will eat before this.
Yeah, it's extreme. I mean, unless a child isn't well, for like there's an underlying chronic condition, a child will eventually eat when they're hungry, yes, or drink when they're thirsty.
And it sounds, like I said, it's an extreme statement to make. Obviously, that's not what you want, but you should be worried about your child's, but it they will eventually eat. I can tell you that. And I think sometimes when we're caught up in that feeding worry, we lose perspective on it.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
If you've just joined me, where have you been? This is 101.9 Hive M. This is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And we've been talking picky eating with Deborah Jacobson, who's a dietitian with a special interest in pediatrics. So it has been a really great conversation, and I feel also very much normalizing picky eating, and also obviously giving some ideas. So again, don't despair if you've missed it. Luckily for you, you can go listen to this show and all of my shows on hivefm.com. We've got a very wonderful library of different topics that we cover with regards to eating, breastfeeding, all sorts of things, parenting. So please do go have a listen to it at your own leisure. If you haven't downloaded our app yet, you can do so. And then you can listen to Hive M from your phone, wherever you are. And also WhatsApp us directly from there. So it is quite helpful to have and be engaged with our community in that way. Deborah, how can parents encourage children to try new foods without
creating this pressure and anxiety about eating?
Well, I think the first thing is the parents need to, it's a good time for parents to reevaluate how they are eating. They need to be good role models. You find that children will try to emulate you, especially at the table. They'll try and eat, they'd like to eat what you're eating. They copy you, and we don't realize it, but it's very important to eat in the way that you want your children to eat. Eating together at the table is very good. Children always eat better in company than they do alone. Sometimes children are still on a high chair somewhere in the corner of the kitchen while everyone else is eating at the table. Having said that, sometimes I'll encourage a parent to send their child to a creche or a play school where they'll be part eating is part of the routine, and they actually land up eating better at play school than they do at home, because there's not so much focus placed on the eating and anxiety. Self-feeding is important. Make sure that children can actually pick up the food and eat themselves, either if not with cutlery, then with their fingers. They like to be independent. Keep mealtimes pleasant, always engage. Get your children involved in the preparation of food, maybe even in the shopping. Take them, if they're not eating fruit and vegetables, take them to a shop where the food looks exciting, different colors, different shapes. Take them with you shopping. You can discuss what you're going to be making. Get them involved in the kitchen to prepare with you, stirring, measuring, dishing up the table, setting the table. Get them involved. They're more likely to be able to eat when they're involved in the whole process. Sometimes, different shapes of foods, different colors can be very appealing. Don't make the plate too full with food. And sometimes picky eaters like it when you can actually separate the food and they can see what they're actually choosing, and it's not all part of a big mush like it was when they were babies, for instance. And don't give up. Repeated exposure, variety, variation in texture, taste, and flavor. Don't give up. I know you feel like it's a waste of money and a waste of food, but don't. It can take up to 15 times of being exposed to the same food before a child will actually accept it. If I think of my first daughter, she only took salads when she went to school, and we had salad at the table every single night from when she was a baby. So it took her a good time to actually accept the food, to try and enjoy it and actually want it. Yeah. So those are the main points that I can think of at the moment.
That was great points. That was really, Deborah, so helpful. And it was such a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for joining me. It was really, really wonderful. We've already made plans that you guys don't even know. Deborah will be back to continue this conversation, talk a little bit about smaller babies and the struggles that goes with that. Deborah, before you go though, where can people find you?
Well, I work mainly in the hospital, actually. I work at Garden City Hospital in the pediatric ICU, but I do see outpatients in Norwood or Orchard area. Mm. So that's really where I work.
So you can just Google Deborah Jacobson. You'll find her. I did it and I found her very easily. Great. Thanks so much, Deborah. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so until much next for time. Me.
Thanks. Okay. On that note, joining me as always on a weekly basis from Dis-Chem. Oh, Lizelle just disappeared. So Lizelle is not there anymore for some other reason. Talking about, maybe Lizelle will come back just now, but talking about what is available at Dis-Chem, what is available at Baby City. I think one of the biggest things that is wonderful about a Dis-Chem clinic or anything like that is the fact that a nurse helps us to check these things all the time. Hi, Lizelle, are you there? I think you're on mute at the moment, so we can't hear you.
Yes, thank you.
Hello,
sorry.
Lizelle, how are you?
Good, and you?
Just fine. I was just mentioning, I think one of my best things always when it comes to picky eating and those type of things was always the reassurance of a clinic nurse that everything is okay.
Definitely. I think there is nothing more that you can actually help by parents with than just the reassurance. I think that's such a big component, because I always feel like they're doing something wrong, or this is not maybe working, and they just need that reassurance to explain to them that everything's going to be fine and we just need a little guidance sometimes.
Yeah. Another thing that obviously is also very helpful when we're talking about things that are available to help us with this picky eating phase is I feel like at Baby City, there is such a variety of like utensils and things, which is also obviously important when you're starting to introduce solids. I mean, I'm not even just talking about spoons. I'm also talking about plates, covers that you can hide, chairs, all those things are available there.
Yes, definitely. Because at first they do make a real mess. And that should be like that because they're experimenting with food. And there's such nice things that you can put over the place where they're eating to reduce the mess for you. And obviously the anxiety you have of how is it going to look afterwards. And especially, like you said, spoons and plates, because sometimes they do get picky with that as well. They're used to getting out of a certain type of bowl or using a certain spoon. And they might be resistant if you even just change the color of the spoon. So things like that really help if you can get it readily available.
Yeah. And again, also, I mean, plastic, that's the reality. I mean, you can't necessarily give your toddler a normal glass and a normal plate and stuff like that because they throw them around, they play with them. Again, which is part of the fun. You shouldn't resist. Don't try to keep it clean, like Lizelle said. Encourage the mess in the end of the day because there's a lot more to the feeding, and Deborah mentioned it multiple times as well, than just the nutrition part of it. There's an aspect of bonding and yeah, the psychology behind feeding, which also needs to be taken into place. As always, Lizelle, it was so wonderful having you. Until Thank next you. Week, chat to you then.
Thank you.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, the show about pregnancy and babies. 101.9 megahertz of life.
Yes, you are on 101.9 Hive M, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And sorry, you've missed basically the whole show. Don't worry and don't despair. As always, this show and all of my shows are available as a podcast for you to go listen to later. It was a wonderful show talking to dietitian Deborah Jacobson about picky eating. She gave some great normalizing picky eating, but also some great tips that you can incorporate to make sure that meal times with your family is a special bonding time. I think one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation for me is that feeding our children is about so much more than simply getting food into them. It's about, you know, creating a positive experience around food, reducing pressure at mealtimes, and remembering that healthy eating habits develop over time. It's, I mean, Deborah just mentioned 15 times exposure to food. I mean, that's a lot of things. On that note as well, I do have to just mention the fact that I am running Comrades on Sunday. I'm very excited about it, very nervous, of course, about it. So do follow me if you want to. I am on the Comrades app for you to go look at to make sure that I've got extra pressure to finish that 85.7 kilometers. But to all of the parents listening, if feeding your child feels challenging right now, know that you're not alone. Small, consistent steps often make a much bigger difference than perfection. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And remember, parenting is a journey, and every family will find their own path. Take what resonates, leave what doesn't. Until next time, be kind to yourself, be kind to one another, and keep supporting one another through this beautiful adventure that is raising children. Until next time, bye.